Wouldn't you love to get paid for doing what you love to do? If you're ready to move on to what's next, join us for Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson. Our uplifting live talk show on Saturday mornings from 10 to noon will have you circling back, not running in circles, to pull your experience forward in new ways. Advance your career, plus help others with theirs. Join us Saturdays, 10 to noon, right here on 104.1 The Truth, for pragmatic advice and unconventional wisdom. Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson, where your path is created by walking on it. You never know how these timely segments seem to cross my path and our path, so it's quite a pleasure that this being National Poetry Month, and also sad what we've gone through this week, that we'd have the precious opportunity to have someone as wise in this whole space of emotions and change and aging as Bruce Frankel. So, Bruce, welcome from New York City, and actually you're down in Florida this week, so nice to have you on the show.
Thank you very much, Sarah. I'm happy to be with you, as always.
You bet. Well, we had entitled the segment The Poetry of Aging and the Aging of Poetry, and it takes on an even more profound meaning, the role of emotions with what we've been navigating through here in the United States, isn't it?
It does, and, you know, this week has been, whether you live in West Texas and experienced the fertilizer plant explosion or Boston, or you've been riveted to the TV wherever you are, feeling what people feel. We, you know, tend to turn to poetry in these moments. It's actually a long history of man doing that, and we look for people who can speak the language of the heart and compress all of our emotions and thoughts into nuggets.
And isn't that something? I think you had put in a note to me about wanting to do this segment, that the great poet Wordsworth said that poetry is emotion recollected in tranquility. And that really made me take pause.
Yeah, no, it's true. And, you know, in a way you can see that the great poems of terrible events often don't occur immediately when the events are occurring. And Yeats, for instance, wrote a great poem about the 1916 revolution, rebellion and the disaster of it. And he didn't write that till a couple of months after, at least, and that seems short order. But, you know, and if last night I went looking to see whether people were already at work writing poems to try to find a way to deal with their emotions, and indeed there were already a great number of poems showing up on the web about Boston. I wouldn't say we have great poems yet, but I was struck by one anonymous one that I think people could easily feel, which was a poem about 8-year-old Martin Richard, the little boy from Dorchester who died, and it was just a simple poem that said, "Too soon was this one gone, too soon."
Yeah, beautiful. Isn't that beautiful?
And so that, you know, that really encapsulates so much, I think, of what we know. And there was just an ordinary person. Anybody, of course, can write poetry, which is also part of the beauty of it. And we all have it available. It is Poetry Month, as you said. And I know a lot of people who have been working one day, every day this month they've been writing a haiku as a way of celebrating and doing that. You know, but as I've been thinking a lot about the poems that have been written in the wake of tragedies and events like this week, we have a great history of it. Lorca and Neruda wrote about the Spanish Civil War, and Yehuda Amichai in Israel wrote poems about the bombings there, and Galway Connell, a great American poet, wrote a terrific long poem after 9/11. And a lot of people after 9/11 turned to a poem that actually was written, weirdly enough, a year before 9/11, but people thought it had been written after that event to commemorate it. And it's called "Try to Praise the Mutilated World," and it's by a Polish poet named Adam Zagajewski, who, I probably have said that wrong, who teaches at the University of Houston. And I'd like to read it if you...
Yes, please, go right ahead.
So this is "Try to Praise the Mutilated World." Remember June's long days and wild strawberries, drops of wine, the dew, the nettles that methodically overgrow the abandoned homesteads of exiles. You must praise the mutilated world. You watch the stylish yachts and ships. One of them had a long trip ahead of it, while salty oblivion awaited others. You've seen the refugees heading nowhere. You've heard the executioners sing joyfully. You should praise the mutilated world. Remember the moments when we were together in a white room and the curtain fluttered. Return in thought to the concert where music flared. You gathered acorns in the park in autumn, and leaves eddied over the earth's scars. Praise the mutilated world, and the gray feather of a thrush lost, and the gentle lights that strays and vanishes and returns.
Very, very nice. And, you know, some people would say, well, that's just a collection of emotions, thoughts, flitterings. But really, poetry does connect to the concrete, doesn't it?
Yes, it absolutely does. And it also connects. We have very concrete responses to physical responses.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of studies, actually, that have shown the healing effect of poetry. It lowers stress. It helps people heal faster. There are people who do poetry therapy. And so there's both the emotional value of it, but there is also a very concrete value to poetry. And one of a poet who I admire a great deal named Gregory Orr, suffered terrible trauma when he was young. He was a 12-year-old boy and was holding the rifle that killed his brother.
Oh, dear.
And it was through the grace of poetry and that he was able to save his own life, basically. And he teaches at the University of Virginia and has written terrific poetry. He's also written a wonderful book that was titled Poetry and Survival. And basically, you know, he says in that the elaborate and intense patterns of poetry can make people feel safe, and mm-hmm. that also that the enormous disordering power of trauma needs or demands an equally powerful ordering to contain it, and that basically poetry is a structure around chaos. It creates a structure within which we can make sense of the world and chaos. So there's that too.
Well, you know, I think embedded this, of course, when you say poetry and survival, that was kind of at play in your life, wasn't it, that you gave up a career to study poetry in your 50s?
That's right. I had always wanted to be a poet, I think, pretty much for a long time, and I had started out hoping to study and was something of a vagabond studying without paying for tuition when I was young at Sarah Lawrence. But when my father was in his 70s and had cancer and was dying, and I really began to recognize that my own life was short, and I wanted to do what I had always dreamed of doing. And so at 51, I quit my job at Time Inc. and returned to studying poetry at Sarah Lawrence College. And weirdly enough, terrible, on the day that I had waited 30 years for to return to school was 9/11.
Wow, yeah, exactly.
To be the first day of classes. And I was so intent on mm-hmm. fulfilling that purpose of getting there. I wouldn't listen to reason about mm-hmm. not going, and I got in my car on the Upper West Side of New York and drove as far as what's called the Spuyten Duyvil Bridge, which divides Manhattan from mm-hmm. the Bronx, and that was closed off, and I had to be turned back. But I was so desperate to fulfill that dream of studying poetry that I couldn't even see the foolishness of what I was doing. But once I was there and once classes began, I found paradise.
Yeah, and I think, again, you're not being able to, quote, physically cross over that bridge, and nonetheless, you were set to go do that, you know, academically, emotionally, and in some ways segue from the life you knew beforehand.
Yes, absolutely. And you know, it's interesting to think it's 10 years now.
Oh, wow.
Whatever, and it's been, I wouldn't have ever, you know, something to say to people who are listening, you know, who think about changing their lives. I could never have predicted all the things that have unrolled from making that step. As crazy as it seemed to everyone around me that I was giving up this career in journalism in order to do this thing where I clearly wouldn't be able to make all that much money or whatever, it seemed crazy, and yet my life has become so wonderfully rich as a result of it. There is no compensation for that.
Isn't that lovely? Yes, it's a psychological compensation. We're speaking to Bruce Frankel, and you can learn more about Bruce's work at Bruce Frankel, FRANKEL.net. And his book, in fact, that emerged eventually from this journey is What Should I Do with the Rest of My Life, where Bruce cameos 12 people after interviewing hundreds and the kind of things that they shifted in their lives after age 60, we should tell you, to do some extraordinary things, many of the people overcoming some really difficult tragedies or early life experiences. Bruce, again, National Poetry Month. Make the connection then between poetry and this whole process of aging.
Well, thank you. I suppose really the best way for me to do that is to read a couple of poems.
That's right. Yeah.
And one that I love, I studied when I went back to Sarawak, I studied with a poet whose name is Tom Lux, who's terrific poet. He now teaches at Georgia Tech. But he wrote a great poem that, you know, life, we reach a certain age, 45, 50, and all of a sudden we realize that that the days are running away like wild horses, as another poet once wrote. He wrote a poem called A Little Tooth, which I always like because it shows how quickly time passes, and it goes like this. Your baby grows a tooth, then two, and four, and five. Then she wants some meat directly from the bone. It's all over. She'll learn some words. She'll fall in love with Cretans, dolts, a sweet talker on his way to jail. And you, your wife, get old, fly blown, and rue nothing. You did, you loved, your feet are sore. It's dusk, your daughter's tall.
I think I just heard my husband sigh all the way across town because we have a daughter who's 15, and you're right. Oh, my goodness, every day changes, doesn't it?
Every day, and, you know, it's so that's a short one. There's in the issue of, you know, when we look at ourselves as we hit these ages and our parents, and you and I are both struggling with issues of parents who are aging, poetry is also a harbor for us to see that we're not alone in this process. And there are two poems that I absolutely love that I'd like to share. One is a poem that shows how, written by Tony Hoagland, and it's entitled Lucky. And Tony wrote it while he was taking care of his mother while she was dying, and at a certain level it's a universal poem about caregiving for our parents and also the exquisite intimacy of that experience, and as well as the role reversals that it entails.
In truth, yeah.
And at another level it's also a poem that he says is about the transpositions of power in relationships. So it's a complex poem, even though it will sound simple. Lucky. If you are lucky in this life, you will get to help your enemy the way I got to help my mother when she was weakened past the point of saying no. Into the big enamel tub half filled with water, which I had made just right, I lowered the childish skeleton she had become. Her eyelids fluttered as I soaped and rinsed her belly and her chest, the sorry ruin of her flanks, and the frayed gray cloud between her legs. Some nights, sitting by her bed, book open in my lap, while I listened to the air move thickly in and out of her dark lungs, my mind filled up with praise, as lush as music, amazed at the symmetry and luck that would offer me the chance to pay my heavy debt of punishment and love with love and punishment. And once I held her dripping wet in the uncomfortable air between the wheelchair and the tub, and she begged me like a child to stop. An act of cruelty, which we both understood, was the ancient irresistible rejoicing of power over weakness. If you are lucky in this life, you will get to raise the spoon of pristine frosty ice cream to the trusting creature mouth of your old enemy. because the taste buds at least are not broken, because there is a bond between you, and sweet is sweet in any language. That's a remarkable poem.
Yeah, that's a really powerful one indeed. Well, you know, poetry and this connectedness with so many of the topics you get involved with what should I do with the rest of my life and aging and us being in good health and vibrant emotionally, you know, there just as a whole variety of spectrums that it can address, from, you know, losing our memories to things that are good and affirming about age. Perhaps you could share one I know from one of your lifetime favorite poets that had a profound effect on you, and that would be Stanley Kunitz.
Yeah, I certainly could. And I would just like to say is that another, you know, an element of poetry is that it is whole brain food.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
In this age when we're worried about how things affect our brains, it works because it's working in images and language and sound and meter and rhythm and memory and perception and insight and on and on. So it is a whole brain food and should be digested regularly with breakfast.
I love that.
Stanley Kunitz, who died after he turned 100, and I actually was at his 100th birthday party reading a few years ago, and it was quite amazing. One of the poems that he wrote in his 90s that I loved is a beautifully affirming poem about age and desire to continue to, and it's called The Round. And he loved to garden. He had a beautiful garden, and it was a profound passion of his, and much like poetry. And it goes like this. Light splashed this morning on the shell-pink anemones swaying on their tall stems down blue-spiked veronica. Light flowed in rivulets over the humps of the honeybees. This morning I saw light kiss the silk of the roses in their second flowering, my late bloomers flushed with their brandy. A curious gladness shook me. So I have shut the doors of my house, so I have trudged downstairs to my cell, so I am sitting in semi-dark, hunched over my desk, with nothing for a view to tempt me but a bloated compost heap, steamy old stink pile under my window, and I pick my notebook up and I start to read aloud the still wet words I scribbled on the blotted page. Light splashed. I can scarcely wait till tomorrow, when a new life begins for me, as it does each day, as it does each day.
What a great poet, and a pleasure for you to have been there at his 100th reading. Bruce, any final thoughts for us today to kind of tie this topic together? What a profound and great segment.
Well, I mean, I just think that people should take the time to return to poetry. It is a resource. It is an oasis for our minds and for our hearts. We acquire from it, as I said before, the grace of language. And I don't know if we, and really there's just so many wonderful poems that can teach you about others' lives. You don't have to have experience. That's the beauty of poetry, is that in a very short instant, you don't have to have lived something to experience it through mm-hmm. a great poem. It can teach you.
Yeah,
and create compassion and attention for the world. And I guess maybe that's my real final thought, is that, you know, it's through attention to the world, that in careful attention, that we can remake things. And I don't know how much time we have left, but I'd also, if you are interested, I'd be happy to read another lovely poem, but I know where our time is here.
We probably are just wrapping up, but okay. For those who are interested, certainly Bruce has got many segments on his site, Bruce Frankel, FRANKEL.net, to explore further, and any number of authors and poets that he, including his own work, that would bring such great joy and perspective and liftoff for us. So Bruce, thanks so much for joining us here today.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time.
Indeed.
And be well.
Be well indeed. Change is chaotic. That is, unless you embrace it, going places you hadn't dreamed were possible.
The Larson Group, Architects of Change, is a leadership consulting, executive coaching, and career transition firm. We help individuals make the most of their current employment situation or to step forward confidently into a career transition. Contact us at thelarsongroup.com or toll-free 1-877-544-2580. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, helping others unleash potential through transformational change. 1-877-544-2580.